is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, find the perfect shooting machine for your team during Dr. Dish Basketball's Fall in Love with More Reps sale. Now until February 29th, choose between two major offers, $2,000 off a Dr. Dish CT Plus and free shipping, or $6,500 off two Rebel Pluses. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Those are some great deals, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is JP Clark, former NBA assistant coach with the Celtics and Clippers, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason.
Finally.
Yes. A few technical difficulties on our end tonight. We had penciled in for, I don't know, we were probably ready to start about
11:15, 11:20,
yeah, somewhere in there. And for some odd reason, my microphone decided that it only wanted to garble my voice so that Jason would not be able to understand me. Maybe I don't have anything good to say tonight, Jay. I don't know what it was. But
I think you have lots to say, Mike.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I guess I've been jonesing for a new microphone, so maybe this would be my excuse to get the new mic. I was looking forward, actually, to showing off my five-star basketball camp t-shirt tonight on the live stream. But unfortunately, because I'm on the phone and my phone needs to be sitting in a charger because I've been using it all day, I can't really be on my ceiling to get the camera shot. So anyway,
I really thought, Mike, that you were going to represent the Strongsville Mustangs tonight. That's really what I thought you were going to do.
You know what's funny is that I guess every once in a while, so for those of you who do or do not know, Strongsville Mustangs, that's my son's high school team where Jason and I both went to school, and they had a big win tonight over the rival school, Brunswick. They beat them tonight 72-39. Brunswick was 17-2. We had beaten them earlier in the season at their place, and big game. Certainly went into it thinking that, if anything, it was going to be a close game. Thought it was going to be a real tough one, and we just ended up taking it to them 72-39. And just, I mean, in all honesty, completely dominated them defensively and just didn't let them do anything. So I do not have my Strongsville Mustangs gear on. Honestly, I almost never wear Strongsville stuff to a Strongsville game. I'm just not one of those guys, however you want to describe those guys. I just don't do that. I just kind of try to stay incognito. So anyway, good win for my son tonight. Kudos to Cal and the rest of the team. And three more games left in regular season, and we get to the playoffs, and we'll see the draw.
It happens this weekend, right?
No, it already happened. So,
oh, yeah?
Happened. So we got the winner of this. Not that anybody who's listening to an NBA podcast cares, but for Coach Jason, we got the winner of Willoughby South against University School. And if we win that, we have...
You should win that, right? They should win that easily.
Should win that. Then district semifinal would be Archbishop Hoban. T.K. Griffith, who was a guest on the podcast. They were the Division I state champions here in the state of Ohio last year, so that will definitely be a tough game in a district semi. And then if we're fortunate enough to get through that one, Brecksville is the top seed in our district, which, knock on wood, I think that, not that we would, should beat them, but I think that's a winnable game for us if we get there. But a lot of work to be done before you get to that game. So anyway, we'll see what happens. So nice victory tonight.
Just a quick reminder, what's the furthest that you made it, Mike?
District semis.
the infamous call. No, you don't need to tell the story.
Do I have to tell the story again?
No.
Feet on the line, man. Lorraine Admiral Kings, feet on the line. We were up three, made a shot at the buzzer, but it was a two, not a three, as the ref from across the court at half court incorrectly ran in to overrule the guy who was standing right next to the play. So I'm not bitter, man. I'm not bitter. District semifinals. And then Lorraine Admiral King went to
the
Cal's goal should be to surpass his old man. So
yeah, that's the goal. That's the goal.
So,
all right, there you go. Okay.
That's it. Local high school basketball hoops talk before we get into NBA.
All right, so let's get into NBA. Mike, so I think what we need to start is we talked last week about the trade deadline and what we thought was going to happen. And
we were right.
I think we were right. Nothing. When your wager is nothing. Nothing major happened at all.
Considering the title of the episode that I chose was Role Player Trades, I feel like that was a pretty apt description of what ended up happening.
Perfect.
Yeah, there was nothing in the way of big major moves that shifted any types of balance of power. There were some interesting things, obviously, that happened across the trade deadline, but there was very little that I would look at and say, oh man, that was really something that changed the world when it comes to what is going to happen in the playoffs this year. I don't know what things stood out to you. I mean, I guess when I think of what
I think the Knicks are the only team that I think feel like maybe got better, right? Like I feel like they're the only team. I mean, between all
and Burks are two guys who are going to should be in their nine man rotation come playoff time, depending on their health. I mean, clearly Bogdanovich is, and then Burks, I think you could, whatever, depending upon who's available and what the matchups are. Alec Burks, guy can score. I think the Knicks are better as a result of that. But then since then, you had Brunson, who was out for a game or two with the tweaked ankle. Mitchell Robinson still out. You got Randall out with the separated shoulder. You had the Anunoby announcement that he was going to miss at least 3 weeks or be reevaluated in 3 weeks with the elbow. And so if you look at a healthy Knicks team, on paper, that team looks pretty solid. I still think that as good as Brunson is, and this has been an ongoing theme on the Hoopheads pod for anybody who's listened to us for a number of years, one of the things that I've kind of always stuck to is I just don't think your best player can be a 6'1 guard, and as good as Jalen Brunson is, I don't think that the Knicks are now a legitimate NBA title contender. I think what it did for New York is it made them better. So depending upon the matchup and who they get, could the Knicks now be a realistic possibility to make the Eastern Conference Finals? I think that's probably true at this point. But does it make them a true title contender? I would say no. But what I do like about this trade is that they didn't have to, in all the things that they did, they didn't have to give up. I believe they have 8 first-round draft choices over the next 4 years, maybe, or 5. I can't remember exactly the time frame, but they have a lot of number one picks, including all of their own, plus the picks that they got from the Mavericks, and I think they have another pick or two that they grabbed up along the way. And so New York's game plan for years and years and years, going all the way back to 2010 and LeBron, is we're going to bring a star to New York City to play for the Knicks. And they really have never been able to pull that off from a free agency standpoint. They got Amari Stoudemire. You traded for Carmelo, but you've never gotten a guy at the apex of their career in a long, long time to become a New York Knick. And this summer's free agent class isn't nearly as starry as it potentially could have been had Giannis been out there, had Kawhi been out there, had James Harden been out there. But should somebody become available at some point, the Knicks probably have as much to offer to other teams as anybody. And Bogdanovich, I believe he makes somewhere between like 18 and 20 million. So he's got, I think it's a team option for next year. So they picked that up, and now he becomes a tradable contract. He kind of fulfills that Evan Fournier's spot that he's been holding down as just a tradable contract that is kind of that middling range. It's not a guy in a max salary, but it's not a $5 million guy either. And so those contracts are important if you're trying to match money and trade for somebody who's a bigger star. So I like what the Knicks did. I think the Knicks are better today, and they also didn't compromise kind of their long-term position. So I don't know how you felt about the whole thing for New York.
No, listen, my ultimate thought is, you know, I think they're definitely got – I think they got better if everyone is healthy. And I think, like, you would argue that this trade also might help them survive without their other players for a little bit. I mean, obviously, you're not replacing Julius Randle with – Alec Burks or Bogdanovich as far as like offensively or defensively, but ultimately these guys can help and they should theoretically be, like you said, playoff rotation players. Do they scare me in a sense that I don't think the Cavs, if they were to play them in the second round, won't match up well against them? They don't scare me like that, Mike. But they definitely, you know, they definitely – listen, when the Cavs played the Detroit Pistons a week ago and we should have blown them out, right? Those two guys were still on the team, and they did a solid job for them, like keeping them hanging around in the game. Like Burks, you know, he had a stint in Cleveland. He's a reliable player.
He can score.
He scores in bunches. He's very streaky, you know? Like, so – and then Bogdanovich, obviously, he can shoot the ball. Like – it's not, they're not getting two slouches here. But once again, like, do I think this automatically makes them a title contender? Like, ESPN is so excited about them now. I don't know if you've caught any of that discourse, but they are thrilled about this trade. And this team is destined for the Eastern Conference Finals and the finals now that they made these trades. And I'm like, guys, they got three guys that are hurt. One's playing, like Brunson's playing through it and all that, but they got three guys that are potentially hurt, and you know, I guess it came at the right time with all these injuries because of the All-Star break, but like, come on, like, let's not anoint them champions yet. Like, let's see what happens, I guess, right? Like, let's see what happens and not assume that they're going to be like the greatest things in sliced bread.
So unlike you, I'm afraid of the Knicks just because of what they did to us last year in the playoffs. And I'm not afraid necessarily because of these two moves, but just the idea of what we saw from the Cavs against the Knicks last year, I would prefer the Knicks not to be our first round playoff opponent. Let's put it that way. I'd rather take my chances with somebody else. But what I do think is interesting is you look at this whole situation at the top of the Eastern Conference, it felt like forever and ever and ever that the Cavs were kind of staring up at all these teams. And obviously they've been on a phenomenal run until they lost that home game last night to Philadelphia. Garland has the three in the air from the corner that would have won it as the buzzer's going off. But nonetheless, the Cavs have been playing really good basketball. And there's been so much, as you said, excitement nationally for the Knicks and getting Ananobi. And obviously that was a really good trade. And the Knicks have played really well since that point. And everybody was excited about this Bogdanovich-Burks trade. And yet you look at the standings right now as it sits today, and the Cavs are four games up on the Knicks in the loss column. Now you could say, that's not really that much. But when you start looking at good teams and making up that kind of distance, like, that's not really as easy as it sounds. I mean, the Cavs have climbed up the standings, but they've also won, I believe, 18 out of their last 20 games. And there aren't many teams over the course of a season that go on a run of winning 18 out of 20. It just doesn't happen very often. But that's, I think, a lot of times when you're talking about good teams, those are the kind of things that it requires of you if you want to get above and jump teams in the standings. So I think that, yeah, the excitement around New York is, I think, warranted to some degree, but it's also, you have to kind of take it with a grain of salt because of how good the Cavaliers have played. And I think the other thing that goes along with the excitement around the Knicks is the fact that most people right now are kind of down on the Bucks, who got destroyed tonight after a big win over Denver last night. Oh, Giannis had,
I think I saw the tagline, a statement win. Yeah, that was a statement win, and then you get slaughtered tonight.
Well, what's interesting is you look at that game last night, and Giannis had, I think he went for 38, 18, and 5, something like that. And you think, okay, maybe Milwaukee's starting to put it together and beating the Nuggets, and kind of that MVP individual matchup between Giannis and Jokic. Giannis comes out and plays really, really well. Okay, maybe the Bucks are starting to turn it around. And then you come right back out tonight and they lay an egg against Miami, who's been at various times over the last 5 years in the playoffs has kind of been their nemesis. So you would think that even though it was the second night of a back-to-back, you would think that that game coming out, that it would be an important game to Milwaukee.
Yeah,
it wouldn't be a game where they just kind of rolled off the bus and came out and said, hey, if we give it a go, let's see what happens. And it seems like that's a game that they would have wanted to get. And Miami just completely took it to them. I mean, Dame tonight, 5 of 14 from the field. He's had way more of those stinker games this
year. Than he should, right?
Yeah, than he's had in past years. I just feel like he hasn't been as good. Like, I know he's not good defensively, and everybody knew that coming in. But I feel like offensively, I know you talked about it a little last week, he's been super inconsistent. And so I guess my point of this whole thing is that when you look at any of these teams, I think the thought process, and I'm not saying the thought process is wrong, but I think the thought process from a lot of people across the league is that those teams at the top of the Eastern Conference, other than Boston, I don't think anybody really feels that any of those teams right now, as they're currently constituted, are that formidable that, oh my gosh, like that team is a juggernaut. Like, okay, so obviously people have questions about the Cavs after last year's playoffs, you and I included.
The bright lights were too bright, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, as good as they're playing, to me, I still feel like it's prove it to me in April and May. I'm happy. I want them to do well in the regular season. I'm excited for this winning streak. But until they show me something in the playoffs, I'm kind of not ready to 100% buy in. So that's the Cavs. The Bucks defensively struggled all year. It just feels like something's off. Even since they brought in Doc, I think now they're 4-6 maybe with Doc, somewhere in there. So there hasn't been this huge, oh my God, Adrian Griffin's gone and now Doc's come in and suddenly things are falling beautifully into place. That team is flawed because he just can't guard anybody on the perimeter. And then the Knicks, okay, Jalen Brunson's your best player. He's great. He's having a fantastic season. Probably should have been an all-star starter. I just don't think you're winning an NBA Finals or even getting to the NBA Finals if a 6'1" guard is your best player, and clearly he's their best player right now. And then you got the Sixers without Embiid. Who knows if he's ever going to come back? So I think all four of those teams, there's major question marks about what are those teams as far as making a deep playoff run. I'm not sure there's a whole lot of people besides their own fan bases who have a strong belief that that's going to be the team that's going to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals to face the Celtics. And to be honest, I think really what you're looking at is of those four teams, you really want to battle hard to get that 2 or 3 seed so you can stay out of Boston's bracket in the semifinals and not have to meet up with Boston until the Eastern Conference Finals. And so it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. But I do think the Knicks, going back to the original point of the question, the Knicks made a good trade, not just for today, but for what they could potentially do in the future. But as you said, they have to get healthy. So I think that Knicks trade was interesting. The other one that caught my eye, I guess there were two, the Dallas trades. So picking up PJ Washington and picking up Daniel Gafford, the consensus seemed to be that
Gafford played really well yesterday, right? He had two
really good games. He's averaging, I mean, he's in two games, I think he's averaging like 19 points, 17 rebounds, and like 3 blocks. I mean, he's played really, really well. And again, he fits completely into the archetype of what kind of center you want to pair with Luka. So they've got
and don't forget about the icon, Kyrie Irving.
There you go. Yes. I'll just leave it there. We're not going to get into any more details on the icon, Kyrie Irving. We're going to keep that. That's an inside joke that we're not going to tell here on the air. So Jason and I will chuckle and we'll move on. But Gafford, now you have Gafford and you have Lively. And so you basically have 48 minutes of a super athletic, rim running, ball screen setting, lively, you know, active jumper. That type of player is exactly the kind of guy that you want playing center next to Luka. And now you have 48 minutes of that type of player. And so I think that definitely makes him better. And then they traded for PJ Washington, who I would say is, he's okay, maybe better than okay.
I mean,
I don't know how great of an upgrade is. The question with Dallas is they're better on the floor today than they were before the trade deadline. The question is they traded a couple of number one draft picks to pull off those trades. And you're basically looking at now, you kind of have to go for – I feel like they're very, very similar to what the Cavs tried to do with LeBron, where they made moves. The moves that each move in and of itself isn't necessarily terrible. But when you start totaling everything up and you look at what has gone out the door versus what has come in, and
it's not a big enough upgrade to make a difference.
Is Dallas a champion? I mean, is this Dallas team a championship team?
No.
Now, could they, again, in any playoff series, if you matched them up with anybody in the West, could you foresee a Luka averages 39? 12 and 12, and Dallas, their three-point shooters catch fire, and they could upset somebody at the top of the West? Absolutely, I could see that. I mean, Luka is that good. However, could they do that for three rounds to get to the NBA Finals? I just don't think
that. Mike, it goes to that Anthony Davis when he was a Pelican, that one. That makes me – this is what it makes me think of. Like, the Pelicans – were good enough to win that one series, but they weren't going to sustain that for more than 1 year, right? Like one series, this wasn't going to happen. They don't have the firepower.
It's too hard. You can look. You need a great player, obviously, to win a championship, but you've got to have other guys around that guy in order to make that happen. And Dallas, look, you were to get the best version of Kyrie for 2 months of the playoffs and you had Luka playing at the level that he's playing right now, I would not be excited at any point to play the Dallas Mavericks in a playoff series. But I just don't think that what they have on the rest of the roster is enough to make up for those two guys. Plus, you have in Luka and Kyrie, I would say on their best days, those two guys are average defenders on their absolute best days. And most of the time, I would say they're not on their best days, which means you got two below average defensive players, which means that probably those other three spots, there's some give and take of, do we need more offense? Do we need more defense? How do we get guys on the floor that balance out what they do? And then you start having to make sacrifices, and the very best teams don't have to make very many sacrifices in terms of who they put on the floor. And so I like the moves for Dallas in the short term. I don't know that they have a choice, because if they don't do anything and they say they're hoarding and keeping draft picks, they're trying to hit and do this and that, at some point, Luka looks around and goes, well, what are we doing here? Like, I don't have anybody to play with. But by the same token, you do the things that they've done, which is make these marginal moves, and you get rid of all your draft capital. It's tough, man. It's tough.
Yeah, I just don't know. Like I said, I don't know what they can do with the current roster situation to improve their roster enough. I think your analogy of comparing it to the original LeBron era, like, we would make these moves. Oh, let's get Danielle Marshall. Let's Antoine Jameson. Like, none of those guys were moving the needle. Like, were they nice players in the NBA? Yes, they were nice players in the NBA. But were they gonna move the needle for the LeBron era teams to get further? Like, obviously they made the finals the one time in 2007, but that was as far as they were going. Like, they weren't going to win at all. That was a lucky year. You know, listen, LeBron's 45-point game, that doesn't happen, right? Like, it wasn't tenable. Those they couldn't make the moves that they needed to make in order to make a huge difference.
Right, making a huge difference. Each of those moves in and of themselves weren't necessarily horrible. And I feel the same thing with the Mavericks. It's not like you look at any one of those individual deals and you're like, oh man, the Mavs got fleeced or the Cavs really got taken to the cleaners on that one. It's more just a case of you're trying to build a championship
team. You made a move,
to build a championship team, and those players aren't guys who are going to elevate what you have to championship level, and yet you're giving up a future, but the future's not guaranteed. And I guess if I owned a team and I was trying to keep my superstar happy, trying to keep my superstar in my city and playing on my franchise, I think it would be very difficult not to do what Dallas or the Cavs did, because you kind of get like one or two big shots, big swings, right? So Dallas, their big swing was trading for Porzingis. For whatever reason in Dallas, it didn't work. Porzingis probably wasn't and isn't good enough to be the second best player on a championship team. Now we watch him for Boston. Maybe he's the third, maybe he's the fourth, depending on how you want to break things down with the Celtics. But he's been fantastic this year for Boston. But for whatever reason, when he was in Dallas, it didn't work to the same level. So teams, especially smaller market teams, only get one chance or two chances to take that big swing at a guy. And if you miss that, or when the window comes, the right guy's not available, so you can't pull the trigger, it's tough. Look, team building is really, really hard. What do we talk about all the time on the podcast? We're always focused on what are teams trying to do to win an NBA championship. But every year, 29 teams don't win and one team does. And ultimately, you have to have one of the best five or six guys in the league. And Dallas has one of the five or six best guys in the league. So I guess you're going to sell out as much as you can to try to put the best team around that guy that's possible. And sometimes what we as fans or media might want and think is possible, the reality is it's not. So sometimes you just end up making these fringe moves. And like I said, Dallas is better on the court today than they were pre-trade deadline. So
yeah, I agree. All right. So then the other, like, there's no other really moves that like wowed me.
There's two other ones I liked.
Oh yeah. What were those, Mike? Tell me, enlighten me.
I'm going to go
Gordon with, Hayward. Gordon Hayward.
Yes. Gordon Hayward. So,
okay.
I want to, can I rename Gordon Hayward?
Gordon Tradeward?
No. If you think back to the history of our podcast, there was a guy, he had the initials RH were his initials, and he always had a word in front of his name that he was a Cavs player that we felt like he was going to fit in really well. And
Theoretical Rodney Hood.
Theoretical Rodney Hood. So I would say theoretical Gordon Hayward is a really, really good fit in Oklahoma City, because theoretical Gordon Hayward is kind of almost the same guy as Josh Giddey in terms of his size, his passing, his ability to defend at the same level that Giddey can defend. But Gordon Hayward, theoretical Gordon Hayward is a much better shooter, a guy who teams are going to respect outside the three-point line, unlike Josh Giddey. So I think if you have Gordon Hayward healthy, to me, I like that pick. Oklahoma City has so much draft capital that it really doesn't matter who or what they give up in that deal in order to get Hayward. So do I think it's going to be a game changer for them? Probably not, because Hayward's probably not going to be healthy. But if he was,
Theoretical
Gordon Hayward, I think, is a good pickup for Oklahoma City. So I kind of like that one.
Okay, what's the other one you like, Mike?
The other one I like is Buddy Hield to the Sixers.
We saw that firsthand last night, right?
Right. I don't think if Embiid's not healthy, it doesn't matter and whatever. Then Buddy Hield or anybody else that you're adding to that roster is completely meaningless. But if Joel Embiid comes back healthy, Buddy Hield is a dude that can shoot. And when you put dudes who can shoot around Joel Embiid, that's definitely going to be a plus. And I like Hield because he's not just a guy who's going to stay in the corner. Like, he moves. He's a movement shooter, and he can get his shot off in lots of different ways, lots of different places. Shoots at a high volume and then shoots also at a high percentage. And to me, he's also a guy who's not afraid to take big shots. If you go back and kind of look at the history of Buddy Hield in the league, there's been lots of opportunities that he's had to make and take shots in clutch situations. And I just think it's a good pickup for Philadelphia, both now, and I don't know whether they'll re-sign him in the offseason or not, but I just think picking him up, if you end up with Embiid back healthy, which is obviously what Philly is counting on, that I like the Buddy Hield pickup for the Sixers.
What do you put the chances that Embiid's back, Mike?
5%.
You think he's out for the year?
Well, here's why. I think at a certain point, right, so the first timeline they announced was a month. So if you're talking about a month, you're talking about middle of March, and that's when he's going to be reevaluated. So if he's going to be reevaluated in a month, the chances of him then being reevaluated and they're like, okay, he's ready to come back, full go, that seems pretty unlikely. So let's say best case scenario, he gets reevaluated in a month, and then like Joel Embiid with his body type doesn't strike me as a guy who he's out for a month, that he's going to be in pristine condition a month from now, having not been able to run up and down the floor and play NBA basketball. So he's not going to be a guy that they're going to immediately activate and suddenly he's going to be playing 32 minutes a game. He's going to need a bunch of time to kind of get himself back acclimated to playing and be on a minutes restriction or practice, whatever. So you're looking at maybe he comes back at the most optimistic timeline to me is like April 1st, and then the playoffs start like April 17th or 18th, whatever. Like, where's Philly going to be in the standings at that point? Do you really think that you're going to get peak level Joel Embiid? Do you want to risk any potential further injury to that knee for a guy that has a history of breaking down? To me, I just don't see how they bring him back. I just think he's going to sit the rest of the year. You try to retool. They got all that cap space. You see what you can do this summer, and now you come back. Maybe you're able to reduce his workload by signing another big-time free agent or making a trade or whatever it is that they think they can do to upgrade their roster. And bringing him back, especially on a rushed timeline when Philly's probably, I mean, I think at best, I mean, there's no way they're going to pass the Knicks or the Cavs. I just don't see them getting up in the Bucks. There's no way they're going to pass the Bucks. I see Philly finishing in fifth at best, and depending on how those teams behind them, Indiana and Miami, how those two teams end up playing, you would think that both of them are going to continue to play better.
Yeah, well, Miami's in a bit of a weird spot, right? Because of the whole Butler. Who knows how long Butler's going to be out? You saw that, right?
Yeah, I saw that.
So, like, I don't know. It's kind of.
I guess what I'm saying is, for Philly, you're looking at you're in the fifth spot at best, and you're going to have Joel Embiid, who's maybe whatever. Even if he comes back 100% theoretically, his knee 100% healed, the chances of him coming back at full Joel Embiid capacity this season to me seems pretty low, and seems like with a guy that has that injury history, it doesn't seem worth the risk to me. So I don't see them bringing him back. To me, it just doesn't make sense. I guess you only get so many bites at the apple, and if he's healthy, you're just going to let him play. But that to me strikes me as something that is unlikely to happen, that his prognosis is, hey, he's 100% healthy, he's 100% in shape, he's 100% ready to go, and hey, we're the Sixers, we're the sixth seed, you know, let's go win a title with Embiid. To me, that strategy seems, that scenario seems kind of far-fetched.
sounds fair. I think I'm a little more optimistic that he's going to come back. I don't know what leads me to believe that he's going to come back. But for some reason, I think he's more likely to come back than you think. But okay. Once again, that doesn't mean I know anything, because I don't. I know nothing on this. So I think ultimately, whenever he comes back, they're going to be in the situation where they're going to be the 5 or 6 seed, probably, which I don't know if he comes, if we're the Cavs and we're the, you know, say we're the 3 seed, like, would you want to see a Philly team that's coming back with Joel Embiid who knows what they're going to get? I think the answer to that question is I'd rather see them over the Knicks. I'd rather see them over, you know, I probably would rather see them over the Heat, quite frankly. Like, yeah, I don't care.
I would.
Probably not the number 8 seed, whatever team that is, because I'm assuming that the Heat are 7, but I don't know. I think that's where my headspace is. If he was to come back and plays maybe 1 or 2 games and then he's going to play in the playoffs, like, I'd be okay facing the Sixers, Mike.
Selfishly, from a Cavs standpoint, yeah, I think you'd much rather see Philadelphia in that slot. And even if Embiid comes back, I would be okay with facing the Sixers. As I said, as you said, I'd rather play Philly probably than the Knicks or the Heat, for sure, if those are some of the potential matchups. So,
Sixers, by the way, the Sixers did sign Kyle Lowry today, Mike. Does that make any difference whatsoever? Is he washed? He's washed, right? I mean, the Heat basically let him go for nothing.
In Philly, basically, I think the thought process there, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I got to believe that the thought process there is Maxey's going to sit 6 minutes or 8 minutes in a playoff game. Can we have veteran Kyle Lowry give us 4 minutes each half to kind of spell Maxey? And I know he'll play more than that as a role in the regular season, but in the playoffs, I just don't see where Lowry at this point in his career is going to be much of an asset, other than he's just filling those minutes when Maxey doesn't play. And Philly really has had – that's one of their challenges is when Maxey's off the floor, how do they create and generate offense? And not that 36-year-old Kyle Lowry is the answer to those questions, but he is a guy who has a ton of experience. He's won a championship. So if you throw him in a playoff game for 12 minutes, the hope would be that, hey, he's not going to kill us and maybe he can – rejuvenate himself, where if all we need him to play is 4 to 6 minutes each half and give us everything he's got, maybe he can give you something. Does he move the needle in any measurable way? Probably not. But that's the role I think Philly envisions for him, is my guess.
Yeah, so, I would guess that you're accurate, Mike.
Which isn't a bad bet. I mean, it's not a bad bet. You're betting on somebody with a track record like that.
A track record, and not only that, but you didn't give up anything to get him.
Correct.
Right? Like,
correct.
That's the other benefit is you just signed him because he got bought out of his contract. So
right.
It's not like you traded an asset for him.
Correct.
All right, coaches, listen up. It's time to kick this season up a notch and give your team the competitive edge they deserve with Game Changer. Game Changer is the ultimate tool for coaches, with features designed to help take your team to the next level. It's time to take this season to new heights. Download Game Changer for free on iOS or Android to start getting valuable stats and video your team can build on. Get the ultimate coach's tool today by downloading Game Changer. Game Changer. Stream. Score. Connect. Learn more at gc.com/hoopheads. That's gc.com/hoopheads.
We spent a lot of time in the East, Mike, in the Western Conference. Like, I just keep thinking back and thinking, man, Minnesota is playing really, really well. Oklahoma City, are we gonna get a new team in the Western Conference in the finals? Because I kind of feel like there's a good chance we're going to, right?
It's hard to bet against Denver, though. I mean, I think Denver, it's interesting because it feels like Denver is still kind of brand new to me in terms of being a Western Conference power. And so even though they won the title last year, it feels like they should still be a team where the regular season matters. And yet I get a sense that their sense of urgency during this regular season isn't super duper high. And so when I look at these teams out west, it's hard for me to imagine that in a playoff series that Minnesota or Oklahoma City, two really young teams, could figure it out and decipher and take down the Murray Jokic pick and roll. Now, again, that's with the caveat that everybody on Denver's healthy. I do think that Denver's bench is, I don't know if thin is the right word, but definitely inexperienced compared to what.
I think my word would be suspect, Mike.
Yeah. I mean, the players themselves, like, they haven't, it's not that they haven't played relatively well. It's just playing a January regular season game is different than playing 15 important minutes in an NBA Finals game. So I don't know. It seems like Denver really didn't do anything at the deadline. So it feels like they must be comfortable with those guys that they have. It's hard for me to imagine Anthony Edwards and Karl Anthony Towns at this point in their career outwitting and outfoxing and beating Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray after what we saw the two of them do last year and what we've seen them do multiple times in other playoff runs. Oklahoma City to me is maybe more realistic just because of how good Shea is. And I think he can go toe to toe from a scoring standpoint with one or both of Jokic and Murray. Oklahoma City just is super young. It feels like when you look at the history of the league, young teams making that leap from, hey, I'm happy to be in the first round of the playoffs, or in Oklahoma City's case, we are battling in the play-in and not even getting into the playoffs. And to go from that to I'm going to be an NBA Finals team, that seems...
That's a big stretch.
It seems like a big stretch. I mean, now look, those two teams have played really well, and they both have a lot of top-end talent, and they both are, I would say, pretty good two-way teams. I mean, Minnesota's offense is a struggle, but when you have Towns and Anthony Edwards, it's certainly possible that on any given night or in any given series that those two guys can be the two best offensive players in the series, which clearly gives you a chance to score enough points to be able to beat somebody to go along with Minnesota's defense and how good that's been all season. I don't know. To me, those two teams are still too young for me to say they can make the NBA Finals. And then you look at the third team, right, the Clippers. I don't know. They continue to play well. I'm not buying it. I mean, I'm buying that they're playing well, and kudos to them for they've kind of figured it out. But there's too much history with Kawhi and Paul George of injuries at the wrong time. And then obviously the James Harden piece of this, we've said it ad nauseum. Anybody who listens to us on a regular basis knows that to me, James Harden is a fraudulent superstar. Wow. He's great in the regular season when things are going his way. When the chips are down and you need the guy to get tough and come up big, it's just not going to happen. Now, maybe it's mitigated if Kawhi is healthy and he's playing at a top five player in the league level, which is kind of where he's been for most of this regular season. Then maybe if James Harden has two good games in a seven-game series and the other five games he stinks, maybe it doesn't matter. But I think it will matter, and I'm kind of with the Clippers. I'm out until they show me a lot more than winning some meaningless regular season games and getting to the top of the Western Conference standings in the middle of February. So, and then you look beyond that. I mean, New Orleans, I don't think you can take New Orleans seriously as a title contender. Phoenix, sure. Give me a healthy Beal, Durant, and Booker. Could they make the finals? Sure. The odds of those three guys staying healthy for 2 months in order to do that, I would say, is pretty low. I don't know, your thoughts on New Orleans or
no? Listen, Zion's not going to stay healthy, Mike. I'm not leaving that barn. I know he's been
chalking up a lot of games this year, buddy.
Yeah. He is chalking up a lot of games, but I just don't. I'm not buying them, Mike. I'm just not, and I don't know what it is, but every time I've seen them play, I'm not thrilled. So they just don't. They kind of at times seem lifeless, Mike.
It's a weird team because here's why. I mean, it comes down to say what you want about Zion. He's kind of mopey and he doesn't exude a guy who is high energy, locked in, intensity. He doesn't give that vibe. And then Brandon Ingram strikes me as just kind of, he's like the cool cat. He does his thing and he's kind of just, he's out there. He glides around, but he's not that grab you, get you going kind of leader. They just feel like they're kind of a team that their two best guys are very, I don't know, mercurial isn't the right word, but kind of laissez-faire. And so,
they're not passionate, Mike. They're not as passionate as you want them to be.
Well, yeah, I guess that's a good way to say it. They still have to find an extra gear. That team needs a point guard who's kind of a leader that can kind of get those guys where they need to be, both mentally and physically, game in, game out, night in and night out. And I don't think, as talented as New Orleans is, I don't think I can take them seriously as a title contender at this point.
Okay.
Zion, by the way, in his career, what's the bet? 250?
Yeah.
157, buddy.
Okay.
By the end of this season, he might only need one more healthy regular season to get there.
He's exceeding expectations.
We'll see.
All right. I think the only thing we really wanted to talk about was the All-Star game this weekend. Unless you have something else, but I think we're already reaching our self-imposed 45
right,
minutes.
You, so. Yeah, I want to ask you one more question. You can answer it in 30 seconds. I'm not even going to – I might share my one-word opinion. So the bottom of the Western Conference, 9-10 right now, sit the Los Angeles Lakers and the Golden State Warriors. Lakers 6-4 in their last 10. Warriors, lightning in a bottle. Kuminga benching Klay Thompson down the stretch of games. 7-3 in their last 10. Which of those two teams do you think is a more realistic possibility to get into the top six?
Neither. Can I say that? Is that an option?
Yeah, like
I think neither. I think they're a playing team. I mean, I'd love to say the Lakers just because of LeBron. I don't want to say the Warriors because they're the Warriors. Prove me wrong. I know I would die on that mic for that saying for a while. Listen, I just don't believe either of these teams are good enough. With that being said, though, I think they're fighting for a 5 seed in the East, probably, especially with Philly in the current state that they're in. I think both those teams are, in the conversation. At least, I don't know what your thoughts. Go ahead.
I'm just gonna give a one word answer. I think the Lakers are more likely. Lakers, but
okay.
I'm with you. I don't think either one of them cracks the top six in all likelihood.
All right. So the All-Star games coming up. We're not gonna spend any time on the rookie challenge, Mike. What, you really want to spend time on that?
No, I don't even. I could care less.
Okay, so we're gonna turn our attention to All-Star Saturday night and these fantastic competitions. We're gonna start with the. I've got them pulled up here. The Skills Challenge.
I got it in front of me, so I'm ready to go.
Oh, the Skills Challenge. We've got Team Pacers with Tyrese Haliburton, Bennedict Mathurin, and Miles Turner. Team Top Picks. We got Paolo, Victor Wembanyama, and Anthony Edwards, and we've got Team All-Stars, which is a stretch considering Scottie Barnes got added.
Come on, man. Scottie Barnes,
Tyrese Maxey, and Trae Young. I'm out on Team All-Stars just because Scottie Barnes is on that team. I'm going with team top picks for my pick to win that, Mike.
Yep, I'm with you.
All right, team there top we go. Picks. It's done.
Yeah, that's a winner. That's a winner right there.
All
right,
3-point contest competition. We've got Malik Beasley from the Bucks. We've got Jalen Brunson from the Knicks. We've got Tyrese Halliburton from the Pacers. We've got Dame Lillard from the Bucks, the defending champ. We've got Lauri Markkanen from the Jazz. We've got Donovan Spider Mitchell from the Cavaliers. We've got Karl-Anthony Towns for the Timberwolves. We got Trae Young for the Hawks. I'm picking Donovan just because I'm picking Donovan. Done. Who do you want to take, Mike?
Ooh, man. Feels like it's the year of Tyrese Halliburton, hometown cooking. Give me Tyrese Halliburton.
Okay. All right. And then the thrilling dunk contest, which we previewed on the podcast last week. Jaylen Brown, some Jamie Jacquez Jr. guy from the Heat.
What do you mean some guy, man? He's going to be first team all rookie. You keep denigrating Jaime Jaquez.
Jaime Jaquez. Just Jamie, isn't
I'm not,
it?
Look, I have no idea. Jaime Jaquez may not even be able to dunk for all I know.
And we Jacob Toppin, the guy who's Obi Toppin's brother, who you didn't even know was in the league last week when we talked about it. Listen, I'm going with the guy who's not in the league. I'm going with Mac McClung, defending champ. Listen, what is he working on? He's playing in the G League. He's playing in the G League. All he's doing is working on this. This is his one claim to fame. He won the dunk contest as a G Leaguer. He's going to do it again as a member of the Osceola Magic.
They're not going to give it to him. They're not going to give it to a dude who's not in the league 2 years in a row. Talk about an absolute embarrassment for the league. A dude that's not in the league is going to win 2 years in a row. Is Jacob Toppin, he's really on the Knicks right now?
He's really on the Knicks. He's averaging like 3 minutes a game and 1.2 points or something like that. I pulled up the stats last week.
Here's what the NBA should do. You want to know my opinion?
Cancel the dunk contest?
No. I want you to think it through. I'm going to give you 5 seconds.
Did we talk about this last year? 3-point contest should be last.
No. Who should the NBA want to win this dunk contest?
Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, absolutely, Jaylen Brown. Because if Jaylen Brown is in this thing and he doesn't win, then other guys who are of that same level are going to look at it and be like, well, man, why do I want to go in there and embarrass myself and not be able to win? Jaylen Brown should be able to do the most boring, ridiculously routine dunks, and he should be the winner. And then the NBA can point to it like, look, man, the NBA dunk contest has stars, needs stars. A star won it this year. We need more stars to participate. And that's the bottom line with the dunk contest. I'm picking Jaylen Brown because I think the NBA needs him to win.
Is this a frozen envelope situation? Is this you're saying that this is going to be rigged, Mike?
I'm saying it's being called in. It's calling in now, Jaylen Brown. Unless he like falls down and like chips a tooth on the rim.
Okay.
It's got to be Jaylen Brown.
Now, I've completely closed out the old DraftKings account, but I want to know what the odds are. Who are the favorites? So I'm going to pull it up right now, Mike. I want to know who are the favorites of these things. I don't even know. Will they even have it? The NBA All-Star. Nothing on the All-Star. Oh, wait, All-Star. No, come on! You gotta have the All Star. There's gotta be ways to bet on the All Star. Nah, that's a joke. That's a joke. Hey NBA, this is silly, Mike. I thought this was gonna be really easy for me to find, but apparently there's no All Star betting. I wonder if there's a reason for that.
There's got to be something. Anyway, Jaylen Brown's going to win it. So move on. Let's go to the game.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. When you look, like, I think I think the West wins this game, Mike. I think they have the better team. I don't know.
All right, let's do that. Let's do this quick. Here's what I would say. I mean, theoretically, right, I think the West has a better roster, but let's go through guys who care about the All-Star game, okay? On the rosters. You just say care or care or doesn't care.
Okay.
All right. So let's start with the way I have it pulled up. Western Conference reserves, Devin Booker.
He cares. He shoots a lot. He cares.
Cares. I agree. Steph Curry.
Cares.
I agree. Anthony Davis.
Eh.
Doesn't care. Anthony Edwards.
Cares. He will care. 100%.
Agree. Paul George.
Yeah, doesn't care. Forget him.
Kawhi Leonard.
Doesn't care.
Doesn't care. Karl Anthony Towns.
He likes to shoot a lot in the All-Star game.
Oh, he cares, baby.
This is a showcase.
He cares, but in a bad way.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Starters for the Western Conference. Kevin Durant.
He cares.
Yeah, I agree. I kind of think he wouldn't, but I think he does. LeBron.
Oh, he cares. 100% he cares.
Absolutely.
He cares.
Jokic.
He's kind of.
Nah, he could care less. He could care less.
Didn't he say that he was. Oh, no, that was Doc Rivers who said he wanted to send his assistant to go on vacation. Yeah,
Luka. Yeah.
I think he doesn't care.
He doesn't care. Shea.
Oh, he'll care. He'll care this year.
I think he'll care. All right. So you've got on the West, you've got two starters that we said, I don't really care. And the reserves, we have two, three. So we got five dudes on the West, five guys in the Western Conference that we said don't really care. All right. The East. Bam.
No.
Yeah, I mean, I think he might care, but he's not Bam's not an all-star type player. Paolo.
He'll care. He'll care.
Jaylen Brown.
I think he'll probably, it's kind of funny because Doc Rivers is coaching him. This is going to be good.
He's a chip on his shoulder guy. I think he cares.
Yeah. Well, it'll depend on if he wins the dunk contest or not. How about
there
that
you
one?
Go. That's true.
Brunson cares. Brunson cares.
Mitchell.
He'll care. Oh, yeah. Diamond will care.
Tyrese Maxey.
Eh, I don't know. Yeah, maybe.
He cares. Come on, man. This is his first All-Star game. He cares. Julius Randle.
He's not even playing. Mike, Julius Randle's not playing.
I'm just reading off what I don't even know who the replacement guys are. Who do we have?
Scotty Barnes. Scotty Barnes.
Scotty Barnes. Oh, yeah. Scotty Barnes cares.
He cares about his highlight. He's an All-Star.
Who else got added? I forget.
With Scotty Barnes and
Trae Young.
Trae
Young cares, baby.
Oh, he's gonna give us the whole cold shoulder nonsense for sure.
Trae Young cares. All right. So then your starters, Giannis.
He cares.
Oh yeah, he absolutely cares. Who replaces Embiid in the starting lineup? That's the question. I guess it doesn't matter because we already went over all those other guys. Tyrese Haliburton.
He cares. First All Star game.
Lillard.
I don't think he cares too much.
I feel like he cares. I feel like he does.
He'll shoot threes from like half court.
Jason Tatum.
He cares because he's.
Oh, he cares, baby. He's getting up his shots. So I think the East has more dudes that care.
So you're going to say the East is going to win the game?
The East. I know you go with the West. I'll go with the East. I like it.
Sounds good. Now are they doing the Elam ending again? I'm assuming
Elam ending is out.
Oh, damn. That's so dumb.
Elam ending is gone.
That made the All-Star game exciting. I liked the Elam ending. That was the only thing that was exciting.
Oh, I like it going back. I like it going back to East versus West. Maybe I'm just old school.
I'm okay with it going back to East versus West, but I would have liked them to keep the Elam ending.
Yeah, I agree. I like the Elam ending. It's something different, and the All-Star game is something different. Look, it comes down to – let the dudes who care play, and let's try to get to a fourth quarter where you just put five guys from each team on the floor who are going to care and at least play some amount of defense to make it a competitive game. And look, I like dunks and fast breaks and half-court three-pointers as much as the next guy, but I don't need to see just guys running out there going 5-on-0. Like, we need to have at least a little bit of effort in the game on the defensive end of the floor to make the offensive wizardry of these guys stand out. When they're just doing it against nobody, you can watch any NBA player stand out on the court and just bang three after three after three after three in practice when nobody's guarding them. And that's kind of what these games become. And so I'd like to see somebody with a little competitive fire kind of get things going. I don't know who that guy is, but I'd like to see it kind of come back and at least be a competitive game in the fourth quarter where the last 4 minutes guys are actually trying to win and trying to defend each other. But we'll see.
Yep. All right. Sounds good, Mike.
Cool. I think we wrapped it up. And
oh, wait. Who's the MVP? Who's the MVP of the All-Star game?
Oh, man, that's a good one.
It's going to depend on who wins. So let's do this. If the West, if the West wins, who would you think the MVP is? And if the East wins, who's the MVP? That way we get it covered. Does that sound good? Do you want to do that?
That sounds like a plan. You're picking the Western Conference MVP?
Well, I'm saying we each pick one for the West if the West was to win, and we each pick one for the East if the East would win. So let's start with the East. Fair. If the East wins, who are you picking for the MVP?
Tyrese Halliburton.
Oh, because it's the Indiana Pacers.
In Indiana, and he's going to play a lot, and he's going to have the ball in his hands a lot.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you on that. I think that's probably I'll just be a contrarian, even though I do agree with you. I'm going to go with a dark horse candidate, Mike.
All right,
I'm going with Paolo.
Okay,
I'm going to go Paolo. All right. For the Western Conference,
Anthony Edwards.
Is Karl Anthony Towns going to let him shoot that many shots, though? Because he's just going to jack up shots.
Maybe we'll see. Maybe those two split votes or split shots.
I'm gonna go for the Western Conference. I'm gonna go with Devin Booker, Mike. I'm gonna go with Devin Booker.
Okay.
All right. Let's go. That's
fine. It's funny though when you look at it. Like I can make a case for more guys in the East to be the MVP than I can guys in the West. And I think because I just feel like more guys in the East. The East has more new guys. They have more guys. They're veteran guys. I think care more than the guys in the West, which is why I think the East is going to win the game. So we shall see. We'll revisit our predictions next week. Thanks to everyone for checking out this week's NBA episode of the Hoopheads Pod, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.